Hey there, this is Seth Ward from Channel 9 coming to you from NDC London. It's a fantastic place. I have here Ben Hall. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm very good, thank you, dude.
So what do you do, my friend?
So I am the founder of a software development studio.
Uh-huh.
We help companies build prototypes and their early stage products,
mm-hmm.
and help them with training courses, and we build our own products internally too.
Fantastic. And by virtue of having a British accent, you sound smarter too.
Of course. It's just a natural thing.
Absolutely. So I heard you know about containerization. I've seen a lot of hype about it. Why don't you describe why it's kind of the new hotness for the DevOps-y kind of space?
Sure, so there are multiple different ways and usages of Docker. One of the most common practices is how you deploy software
right.
into your development environment or into production.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, if you take something like Elasticsearch, a very popular search engine that you can deploy into your infrastructure, it's very powerful, but it's also got a lot of dependencies, like the JVM and different versions and different configuration which is required. Docker
sure.
allows you to package all of that up and deploy it as a single image, and then you run that as a container.
That's interesting, because traditionally what you'd have to do is you'd have to spin up a VM, make sure everything is on the VM. What's the difference between containerization and a VM other than it's smaller?
Exactly. So with a VM, you've got a very nice isolation process and everything is shielded, but you've also got this huge overhead of the guest operating system.
Sure.
So when you want to just boot up just something to run Elasticsearch or a node process, you still have to boot up the guest operating system along with it. So this can take 30 seconds, but you also need to give it huge amounts of RAM and huge
right.
amounts of disk space just to run something very simple. And containers get around that. You don't have that huge overhead of the guest operating system because it changes the way it does its virtualization.
So for virtualization, is it just a collection of processes that are running in isolation? Or is there like a thin emulation of the OS? Because you can run other OSs as containers, is that right?
Completely.
So how does that work?
So how Docker works is it's a kernel virtualization. So it takes advantage of the host kernel, so the Linux kernel running on the host machine, and then it uses various kernel hooks and things like C groups and namespaces
uh-huh.
to shield and isolate different processes running on that box.
Okay.
And Docker is just a management layer and an interface and where you work with that in a daily basis.
So my guess then is that in any given application, you're going to have tons of containers. Is there a way to manage those?
So this is where Docker provides a lot of tooling. Containers have been around for a very long time. Like FreeBSD back in the 1980s mm-hmm. introduced the concept of containers.
Okay, I did not know
so
that.
So they've been around in different forms and different variations. It's only very recently that kind of Docker has come along and started to formalize and started to give some conventions and some tooling that you can work with and manage it on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
The things like telling you how to run containers, what are the images, how do you download them, how do you see what's running on your system in a nice way. And there's lots of other variations now coming up which are taking the inspiration from Docker and how Docker working and having their own spin and their own take on it.
So the question then becomes, as a developer, how do I get started with this kind of thing? I mean, do you have something to show us, to
sure.
show us how to even start making a Docker container?
Okay, sure. So I guess the first place to start is obviously Docker is my favorite. And if you go into the toolbox, this has got everything which you need in order to get started.
But there's other ones too, right?
Yeah, completely. So CoreOS, which is like a new take on operating systems and Linux operating systems, have their own variation called Rocket.
Okay.
And I'm working very closely with Intel to focus more on very security-focused, very hardened containers.
Got it.
For particular technologies.
So is it true, I've heard, maybe this is hearsay, but that with containerization, there are security implications that you should be aware of. Are there?
So this is the weird one where people sense and people say that they've a security risk, but mm-hmm. for me personally, and from what everyone else has been using it, there's nothing which kind of give confirmation to
yeah.
that basis.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, a container is as secure as what you put inside it. If you're going to deploy software which has got a vulnerability,
mm-hmm.
then the container is going to be vulnerable because that's
yeah.
natural. If you open up, so previously we launched, just on one of my little play boxes, I launched an Elasticsearch
mm-hmm.
droplet. And just launched the container. And it was running, it was quite happy, but I kind of wasn't paying attention and I bound it to a public port. And so a few days later, get this nice little email from my hosting provider going, there's some weird networking bandwidth going on, and we've disabled your networking card for your droplet. I was like, that's interesting. Went into the box, and it was like, 600 megabits per second spike.
Oh.
And it's like, wow, that's not normal. Yeah, like my blog's good, but it's nowhere near that. It's
maybe
not
you
that
got
good.
A really good entry.
So I looked in and it's like, wow. So it was one of the Elasticsearch had been hacked. Like, because it was open, they had managed to upload crafted Java code, uh-huh. which executed and downloaded DDoS attacks.
I see.
And it was like, wow, that's weird. But because it was running in the container, I was safe in the knowledge that they couldn't have broken into the host because everything was protected and everything was shielded.
So you just kill the container and then did just a little bit smarter.
Exactly. And okay. like Docker could have gone even further and protected me even more if I had configured it right. So that's where there's lots of support, but it's all still down to you making sure that you run it securely.
I see. And so that's an interesting. Anytime I ask the question, but is it secure? The answer is, well, what did you do?
Yeah, exactly.
And so that's all right. So you go to Docker. There's a Docker toolbox.
Exactly. So this is, so if you download it for Mac or for Windows, it will download all the tools which you need. So the client, the machine, which helps you set up like foundations, Compose, which is a nice way of managing which containers are running, and it will also give you VirtualBox. So as I said before, it's a Linux virtualization, mm-hmm. so you need a Linux VM. And so this sets up something very small, very lightweight, just for development purposes.
So when I downloaded it, it installed Oracle's VirtualBox?
Yeah.
Let's just say for some reason I'm using Hyper-V, VirtualBox is not going to work. Is there a way to set up a boot to Docker in Hyper-V that will work the same?
So at the moment I recommend doing Hyper-V, but you can use VMware Fusion, and I'm sure with some tweaks you could probably make it work.
Because it's literally Docker is containing is controlling a Linux box to host containers.
Exactly. So okay. any Linux VM which you've got running in Hypervisor, you can connect to it from the client, sure. and it will just work exactly the same
but
way.
But traditionally, it's VirtualBox that they use just to get
it's
started.
It's just a very nice way to work
sure.
out of the box.
Cool.
And so what you'll end up with is you'll end up with a Docker client.
Right.
And it's got lots of different commands what you can use. And so if we wanted to launch like a container, let's say something like Redis, there's a bunch of official images on the registry. So
and so the images Docker. Would be their containers that has everything prepackaged.
Exactly. So okay. an image is, it's got all of the base operating systems, it's got all of the configuration, all of the dependencies, like for Elasticsearch, it's got the JVM and version it needs. So let's take something like Redis. And you can come on in, it tells you exactly what you need to run to get it started. So Docker pull, which will download it onto your local machine, and then it just tells you how to start an instance. So if we go ahead and do that.
How big are these images?
So that really depends on what you're trying to run. They're getting much, the people and the creators behind the images have been more aware of how to create smaller and smaller images all the time. Mm-hmm. So when I started deploying Docker, my node image with everything was around 700 megs.
Got it.
But we've now changed that to use a different base operating system and use something much smaller, and it's now down to 35 meg.
Which is remarkable. I mean, considering when you were doing VHDs or whatever other format for your virtual machines, these things were in the gigabytes,
exactly.
hundreds of gigabytes.
So you, even if you're using the default off the shelf, you're significantly smaller. And the way it downloads, if we just do a Docker pull, by default it will download the latest version. But you can specify if you wanted 2.8, you can specify that and it'll download it. This could be a Wi-Fi problem. That's fine. And what it will do is actually download layers of the image. It's very similar to like a Git repository. And so if you've already got that particular layer and those particular files on your machine, it won't download them. It will just download the ones which you need itself.
I see. And so for those who don't know, Redis is this caching thing.
Yeah, so Redis is a key value store. Yeah. Very similar to Memcache, if people are familiar. So you set it, give it a key and give it value, and then you can do lookup sets. So very popular for Redis. So this is just the conference Wi-Fi, obviously.
Sure, sure.
But let's say that's downloaded everything. So to run it, we just do Docker run and Redis. And now instantly we've got the latest version of Redis, which at the time is 3.6 running. You can see it's on running a particular port, and that's something which we can now communicate and work with our application.
So virtually what you're doing is you're standing up a collection of processes that to people on the outside look like its own machine, but it's really just the collection of processes or services that you're running.
Yeah, so everything gets its own IP address. So this container has got an internal IP address. If we load up a different window, so that what you can do is you can list all the containers running, as I said, And by default, they get Fini quirky names or an ID, which you can reference. They can do things like inspect. And you get all of the internals. So you can see the IP address of that particular container, and then you can reference it in future. And as I said, everything's, by default, everything's sandboxed and everything's isolated or protected. And so you can make it open up hooks and open up doors. So very similar to how you think of a real-world shipping container. So these big metal boxes which are sent all around.
Yeah.
What's actually inside doesn't really matter because it could be anything. It could be a car, it could be t-shirts. It's irrelevant.
Sure.
What's the most important is they're a certain size, they have a door in a certain place, and they have hooks in all the corners so they can be interconnected. And that's kind of the same metaphor for software containers.
That's interesting. So there's been a rise in this notion of microservices, and it feels like containerization is the perfect technology for it. Was it containerization that inspired microservices, or the other way around, or did they just sort of grow up together?
I think it's just they both formed. Containers, as I said, have been definitely around longer than microservices.
Of course.
But microservices, because you're deploying so much more frequently and you're deploying so much more than just this one big monolithic application, containers are the way to make managing and deploying all of those number of different services much easier, because you can deploy them much smaller, much more rapidly, and you can be aware of where they're being deployed at what particular point.
Not only that, but you could tie your specific implementations to whatever versions of the software you were running as well.
Completely, exactly. And so for the stuff which we're building, some of it has been upgraded to the latest version of Node, but some of it we haven't got around to upgrading yet. And if that was all running on the same machine, like there would be conflicts going on, and there would be Node going, well, this isn't the version I was expecting. Because everything is in a container, everything's shielded and protected and sandboxed, it's all like, it's not conflicting at all.
Got it.
So we can have multiple different versions all independently running and all being very happy because that's what it expects.
That's awesome. So we saw two commands, Docker pull and Docker run. What are some other kinds of things that you can do?
So it then down to your own creativity.
Sure.
So one of the things which we do quite common is to kind of launch a Node application.
Okay.
So I'll just change into a demo which I was doing yesterday. And so this is just a default bog standard Node app from the default Express. And so we've got this Docker file which defines how we actually build and deploy that particular version.
Got it.
And in this version, we're simply saying, take a base layer and then add some flexibility to it.
I see. So you have a base sort of container that you can base new containers off.
Exactly. So it's kind of like a embrace and extend mentality. So you take something which someone else has done, so let's say just a Ubuntu operating system, and say, I need something running Mono or I need something running Node.js.
Sure.
And then someone's extended that and created an image. Again, it's probably on a registry already been built for you. And then you can continue embracing that until you get to you wanting to deploy your application and say, that's the version which I need. I'll just deploy and install my application on top of it.
Now, is this the same thing as, for example, me pulling a Docker image from the Docker pull and then having something there and then saying, well, I need to add these couple other things. You just add those and then that's what's going to happen?
Exactly. It's just in the Docker file, it's just adding additional layers onto the base image, which you can then have on your local machine, or you can push into a private registry so you can share it from, like, say, development to staging to production.
Got it.
Or if it's public, you can push it over to the Docker Hub and share it with the rest of the open source community.
That's cool. And so once you have, it looks like that you're tying your application to a Docker file as well. So for any application, if you want to do containerization, you're also going to have a Docker file definition, and that's what this is.
Exactly. So this is just a very cut down one because it's Node, it's taken default conventions, and so you only actually need two lines of code to deploy it. So it's very nice, but it's kind of a list of instructions about how your application is configured and how it's structured. And how to deploy it. So in my previous example, you can see that this is using just like a very cut down, minimalized version.
Sure.
And we use this just because it makes it simpler and we can be very much more consistent. But if you want to look at what's going on under the covers in the actual base image, it's doing the same principles. So we're saying we're expecting a base image of Node 1038. We're then running the commands which require to get it set up and deploy our application. So for example, making a directory, setting out the working directory, copying our source code into that particular directory itself, running npm install. So this will download all of the node packages and the node modules which we need. And then we're giving it some metadata about how our application is actually configured. So what ports are it running on, and how do you actually start it in the first place?
So is this like, this feels like batch file type of stuff. Is it its own language? Is it, what is this language that you're using?
So if we start, everything in capitals is basically Dockerfile instructions.
Sure.
So it's just some commands. And these are the common ones which you'll see people use. And the advantage of this is it's very generic. So if you move between different projects and if you look around different open source, they will all look and feel very consistent.
Got it.
And then these are just shell commands.
So the other question I have is, it feels like you're running this in a VM, but it's not.
Exactly. You're running it, and Docker is managing that process isolation for you.
I see.
And so Docker is doing a lot of the work and the heavy lifting that Hypothesis would generally do, but it's just taking advantage of the kernel hooks. So in Linux and in future Windows.
So you can treat this container as if it were its own operating system with its own stuff in there, and that's fine too.
Completely, yeah, exactly.
Cool, so here's a Docker, this is a Docker file that's telling it, and usually do you have a Docker file for each of your applications?
Yeah, so this is why we have this very cut down, short, minified one, because then we just share that against everything. But then everything which you want to be deployed in and built into an image, which will then be run as a container, has a Docker file which defines how that image is built in the first place.
Got it.
It's very important because you want repeatability.
Sure.
You don't want to be creating these ad hoc, random snowflake images, because then you're in the same position you are with VMs, which get created and then they can never be rebuilt because someone's tweaked it along the way. The Dockerfile is that way to automate it and make sure that it's repeatable and consistent.
Cool. So we talked about getting images. We also talked about running images. We also talked about describing images for your particular application. What about deploying images? Where do these things actually go?
Sure. So the first bit is we've got the Dockerfile and we've got our source code. We need to run it and we need to build it and turn it, our source code and our Dockerfile, into an image. Mm-hmm. And again, this is just done by Docker build command. And this takes one argument by default, which is the current directory. But this will not give it a name. You'll just get an ID back, which isn't very helpful. So it's always useful to give it some kind of particular name. So we could do like channel 9 node app.
And so what this is doing then is it's actually looking for the Docker file for how to create the actual image, and then it's taking the application, well, it's running the Docker file, which is these things, and then it's copying everything over and then running it.
Exactly. So it's just listing through and it's going through. So for example, I've already got the base image on my local machine, so it didn't bother going off and downloading that.
Right.
But if it wasn't there, it would do it. It's then copied over my package file. It's now running npm install. Which hopefully, based on the Wi-Fi, will complete. And then it will complete any steps which are required. So it's just npm install in this case, but it could be downloading additional dependencies, tweaking configuration files, it's whatever you need to configure your application. And so it can be quite flexible and unique to your circumstances.
I see. And so once this is done, so now that you've got your application, it's standing up the Docker container, it's installing the application. Because right now all I see is you're copying the package.json, but what about all the other files? Are those going to be copied over later?
Exactly. Yeah. So I've flipped around the ordering just because it's a performance. So all of these steps are cached because you want a very quick build time for even your Docker images, the same you do for your MS build.
Absolutely.
So we'll copy over the package, which if this hasn't changed, then it will skip over the next run command because it will produce identical results. And so you can really quickly speed up and build up.
I see. And then you're getting all the packages down, you're going to copy everything over, and then you're actually going to run node on the index.js.
Exactly. So if we go and we look at something which we've been pre-built, so Docker images shows you everything what you've built in the third place. So this is a node application, the same thing which I built yesterday. And so now we've got that, we can just simply go node run, Docker run node app, and that will now launch the application which we had just built and had got compiled, and it's now running as a container in exactly the same format as we were running Redis beforehand.
I said this before and I'll say it again, this kind of takes away our developers' ability to say, well, it works on my machine.
It does indeed, it does. If you can get it running in a container and it's working and it's happy, then you can be a lot more confident that when you put that into production, it will work in exactly the same way. Because once it's been built, you don't want your Docker image to change. You want it to be like, this is fixed, this is how it is working at a particular time. And so then you remove all of that uncertainty. It's like, did someone log into the box and manually tweak a setting?
Yeah. So it's just, it feels like it's all running in its own sort of shell. It's really cool.
It's extremely powerful, and there's so much more cool things which you can do with Docker just beyond from deploying your application. So for example, people are starting to use this to deploy desktop applications.
Oh, I see.
So one of the really cool core committers on Docker, she's got Skype running inside of a container, and she hooks in all of the sound and bi-mounts all of the display ports and everything in Linux, and then to deploy it, she just does Docker pull Skype. And then it just downloads, and it's got everything pre-configured, pre-set up, and that's it. She's got Skype. And she did the same for Chrome, things like Atom and Sublime. It's so awesome to see.
Yeah, well, because there is sort of a repeatability.
Exactly.
And if something were to happen in that environment, you could just...
which is why it's great for things like Chrome, because you can limit the CPU cycles, you can limit how much memory it can take, and if you don't want your Chrome instance, because like it's taking up too much memory.
Kill it,
restart it, and then you're back to a fresh, brand new instance again.
The other thing that's interesting to me is that this Docker file is a text file, and so you can check it in, and if there was an environment change, you will see the diff on that particular file.
Exactly, so that's one of the important things. It's about the shareability and the repeatability. And one of the other tools which I mentioned at the beginning was Docker Compose, which allows you to share configurations and multiple structures. So if we just go to one of my other directories. Yeah, so if we just go and show one of my other sample projects, so Docker Compose is a way to define multiple containers as YAML. So here, I've just got my development dependencies for my local machine. And so I simply say, this is Redis. I want this particular version of Redis. Mm-hmm. I want to run it on these particular ports. And if it crashes, just automatically restart it for me because it's only development time. And I do the same for Postgres.
I see. So this is even more interesting because now we're getting into the situation where, because I think I feel like I was focusing on a single app, but this lets you sort of compose a number of containers and build them together using a YAML file.
It's a way that you can define it, you can share it, and then to bring it up, you do Docker Compose up, and then it will launch everything in the right order with all the right configurations. And you can be confident that there's no one on the team using a slightly different version because everything's been defined in this YAML file.
And that's interesting because you say in a certain order, and that's important because you might have services in one container that are required for services that start up in another container.
Exactly, and especially when you go into this very large-scale distributed system, so things like ZooKeeper and Kafka and a lot of the cool queuing technologies, they have this inbuilt dependencies and expectations. And so this allows you to define all of those, all of that configuration. And so it's not just in a wiki page, which is outdated. It's not just in someone's head. It's now executable in what everyone is using. And it's committed and shared with the rest of the source code.
And then the other thing that I think is cool is that I think, like, this is a human readable, this is my architecture.
Exactly. And it's like, these, in order to run my application, this is exactly what you need, the particular versions, or the right configuration settings.
And so if someone else didn't want to use Docker for some reason, they'd be able to look at this and they'd know, we're using this Redis image that has these versions, this is how everything works, and I can replicate this. You probably wouldn't want to, this is probably already done, you should probably just use it.
Exactly, but if you wanted to use alternative container technologies or use something else to manage what containers are running, so there's really cool technologies like Kubernetes from Google, then you can take this YAML file and they use it and you deploy it into production using Kubernetes, but it's still based off the same format.
So I heard there's something called Kubernetes and something similar called Mesosphere that does the same kind of thing.
So Kubernetes is more for managing replication and auto-scaling and kind of your cluster of host machines and what containers are running where. And it can say things like, I always need three replicas of Redis running to ensure my cluster. And so if one goes down or one disappears, then it can automatically spin it up and bring up new machines and new virtualized machines in the cloud if it requires. Mesos is slightly more powerful. And it's more, from my point of view, it's more dedicated to being like a scheduler for like a Hadoop alternative. And so you give it a workload and it will manage all of the containers that needs to complete that workload.
I see. One is more of like the noun of the actual bunch of containers, how many there should be and what happens when some of them die. And you're saying Mesos is more of like the verb of the, we want to get certain things done, but we're going to use containers to do it.
And I think that's, for me personally, that's how I like to split the two approaches to the different patterns.
So just as a final thing, because we've sort of started from small and then micro with single containers, we've gone up to macro with multiple containers and things that manage them. When I'm actually building these applications, there might be confusion as to where am I actually storing the data? Like for example, like if you have data in Redis and one of them falls down, how do you get them to communicate together? Are we getting into the distributed computing problem?
So in terms of storing data, so by default, everything will be saved in a container. So very similar to if you used any platform as a service.
Yeah.
So like Heroku or Azure, it's like if you redeploy, you lost all of that temporary
right.
data which was in the previous one. So with Redis and containers, you don't want to do that. You want to be able to mount and remove the data from inside that and place it on a host. And that's just a configuration switch. So you simply pass it in as a parameter saying, it's very similar, I like to think of it like a symlink. So when you're writing to this particular directory in the container, you know what, actually write it to my host
you're
instead.
You're like fake mounting to the host.
Yeah.
I see, and so when you're getting, that's even better, right? Because you don't have to sort of do this orchestration or coordination. It's more of like we're saving data to the host.
Exactly, and I think we can see this in one of my other Docker Compose files. Yeah, so here we can see I'm saving particular data, I'm saving some DB, I'm saving some uploads, some temp uploads, and I'm just storing this on my host in my particular where I am concerned about it.
Sure.
And then I can manage this, I can manage backups, I can manage making sure that it's properly shared properly secure in the way it should be. And if I redeploy, then everything gets remounted and the new version will then point to the same directory and so you don't lose any data.
So the persistence is managed by sort of making the data go outside of the container and then after that it's just business as usual.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, this has been very helpful, my friend.
Very good.
Where can people go to find out more about you and maybe some of the stuff that you write down to help us learn?
Sure. So one of the products which I'm currently building is called Katacoda. Mm-hmm. And we help people learn technologies right in their browser. So if they want to learn more about Docker, then they can go to katacoda.com and start playing with tutorials, having a learning environment right in their browser. Mm-hmm. And then if they want to know more, then they can go to blog.benhall.me.uk,
okay.
And that's got a lot more information about the work which I've done and other examples of using Docker and technologies.
Fantastic. Well, this was very helpful. We have the fabulous Ben Hall here with us today. My name is Seth Juarez. We're at NDC London 2016. It's a little chilly here for me, but it's great. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time. Take care.
Thank you.